Would like it noted that we have at this time Representative Grusendorf and myself, Representative Larson. We're going to ask Representative Davies if he would join us at the table. I know Representative Brown is ill today, so her chair will be open.
Yeah, it kind of bounces the room off.
Representative Parnell also, if you wish to sit over here, is. Once again, we wish to remind all committee members that those who are late are going to be deducted on their capital budget this year.
That's good. They'll get a big capital budget for the Democrats this year.
Republicans got it all last year.
Let the record note that it's all Democrats here at the meeting today.
We have Representative Navarre joining us, so. Representative Davison, we have a seat open here. Representative Parnell is absent today.
Well, I'll just be staying. Okay. That's reserved for those people who work.
There goes OMB's budget again.
I can't draw a little man on the finger.
Luann, could you call Representative Lindsay Martin's office?
Call around anyway.
Hoffman, back to order. We now have Representative Grusendorf, Hanley, I'm Chairman McLean, Representative Navarre, and myself. Also joining us. In the audience, we have Representative Davison and Representative Davies. And we are ready then for, first of all, we will start with the overview by the Office of Management and Budget on the fiscal year 95 budget. And second, then we'll take House Bill 18, which was fees for police protection by police. So at this time, we have Mr. Shelby Snatsky with us, and we would like to recognize him and anyone else he would like to bring to the table with him. Welcome to House Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Shelby Stastny, the Director of the Office of Management and Budget. With me is Nancy Slagle, who's the Director of the Division of Budget Review. The budget that we have presented this year was previewed on December 15th. The budget that was introduced after the governor's State of the Budget address is the same as the budget that was previewed on December 15th, except for the budget of the Alaska court system. The Alaska court system budget that we presented on December 15th was no increase over the prior year. The budget that was introduced last week was a pass-through, if you will, of the budget recommended by the court system, which was a $2.6 million increase. So other than that, the budget that we introduced is the one that has been around now for since December 15th, and I'm sure most of you had an opportunity to at least review the overviews. The budget that we presented, as far as agency operations goes, was a hold-the-line, hold-even budget. It was generally what we asked the departments to do was to prepare a budget that was the same in nominal dollars as the budget for fiscal year 94, the budget that we're operating on now. We did allow them to make proposals of increases if those increases could, if they could find reductions other places in their department to fund the increased service necessary, or if they could find additional revenues, and generally the department's ability for additional revenues, as you know, is through program receipts. And so there is some increases in there where departments were able to identify new program receipts. We didn't allow them to find additional use for old program receipts or program receipts that were already being received by the department. It was new program receipts that that in some cases we have allowed the departments to have an increase in their budget to that extent. There were a few areas that the governor wanted added emphasis to, and so there is some additional money in our proposed budget for those areas. The first area is the Department of Public Safety in the area of state troopers and Fish and Wildlife Protection officers. There's an additional $2 million in the Department of Public Safety's budget to cover additional troopers and public safety officers, plus some other needs in the Department of Public Safety. There's some additional money in the Department of Law's budget for a few new prosecutors. And there's some additional monies in the Department of Transportation's budget to maintain the maintenance, the highway maintenance, repairs and maintenance and portion of the Department of Transportation's budget. Other than that, the departments were asked to keep their budget level. Generally, no new increases except new program receipt increases. In the formula program area, we felt that there was a couple of areas in the program, in the formula program area, that there could be some adjustments made to. We believe that if we're going to make any real impact on budgets in the future in Alaska, that there has to be attention paid to the formula areas of the budget. That's where the significant growth is coming. In the budget. And so what our proposal is that one of the formula program areas, and that's the municipal assistance and revenue sharing, be reduced. Our proposal is that it be reduced by 50%, which is a reduction of $36 million between the two programs. The senior citizen property tax exemption that we've talked about in the past, we don't have the funding for that in there. I know the House was responsive last year and did pass a bill that would have made that program optional with the municipalities. We still believe that's the right approach. And so we've continued that approach in this budget. And then the other area in the formula programs is we have not funded on our budget the additional amounts that school districts would receive because of their additional enrollment. We've left the overall funding for the formula program the same as it was in fiscal year 94, which has the effect, as that gets prorated through the system, of reducing the unit value down to, what was it, $59,800? Is that right? To $59,800 a unit instead of $61,000 a unit as it's been in the past. As most of you know, we have suggested on the other side of the ledger, on the revenue side of the ledger, some modest revenue-raising measures. We believe that we need to begin looking at those kinds of measures. We believe that over the last few years, the departments have not increase their budgets at all in real dollars. The departmental operations of the state are down between 25% and 28% from the time this administration took office. That with the budget gap that we have, if we look out for the next 5 years, in no year is the projected difference between revenues and expenditures less than about $800 million. We believe it's not possible to reduce the budget $800 million a year. about $900 or $950 million of the budget is in the actual operation of government. The rest of it is in the formula programs. And so if you're going to achieve $800 million a year in savings, it's going to have to come mostly from the formula programs, which probably isn't likely unless we make some significant modifications in how we do formula programs. Certainly, there's still some room to make reductions in the budget, and we all have to continue to be looking for those. But we believe we need to start being honest with the people of Alaska and not continue to tell the people of Alaska that we can fix our problem by reducing the budget. It isn't going to happen. And so we believe that we need to at least start talking about revenue-raising measures. And that's why we propose some modest revenue-raising measures in this budget. We've talked in the last few years about increases in the fuel tax. Alaska has the lowest fuel tax in the nation, hasn't been increased for many years. We're proposing that the fuel tax be increased to 24 cents a gallon from the current 8 cents a gallon, to 25 cents a gallon, really. The 1 cent we have at least internally earmarked for the fuel storage program, fuel storage assistance program. So 24 cents would be the normal fuel tax, with 1 cent being earmarked for the fuel storage assistance program. We've suggested the alcohol and cigarette taxes be increased by 50%, which would raise another $13 million. We've suggested that there be a royalty charged to those people who have an exclusive right to use the resource which belongs to all Alaskans, the fish resource. This resource has been taken for years by people who we've granted a license to take the resource. And unlike many other resources in our state, we've not charged for the privilege of taking that resource. We're suggesting that there be a royalty charge for that. Now, we understand that there are some taxes paid by the fishermen who take that resource. That tax, generally, a tax is different than a royalty. A tax is for the government services to be provided for those people who are engaged in certain areas of commerce. The royalty, on the other hand, is the payment for the resource that that you're taking. So we're suggesting, and although it's still in draft form and you haven't seen it, the suggestion that we're making is that royalty start at 2 cents a pound, 2%. I'm sorry, 2% this year, rising to 5% in the future. So it would be a graduated scale.
Chairman,
On that point, Representative Grusendorf.
Yeah, Mr. Tasney, you've been talking about we suggest and we suggest and we suggest and we recommend. Are you telling us that there will be legislation that will follow to implement this, or are you just going to continue suggesting and recommending?
There will be legislation. The legislation's in draft form now, and within the next couple of weeks I expect it will be introduced. And the final area that we've looked at for some revenue-raising measures is what we call an employment tax. It was patterned after the old school tax, which is a certain dollar amount on early earnings. The school tax, as you'll remember, was $10 a head. The tax that we're recommending is $100. The $10 a head didn't seem to raise much money. $100 a head, we believe, will raise about $40 million. And again, that legislation is in draft form, and we're working out some of the details. But the idea is that, at least in the draft that we currently have, is that it would be $100 from the first few paychecks. If a person's paycheck isn't very large, then we don't want to take a significant percentage of it. And so it's the lesser of $100 of their the lesser of $100 or 10% of their salary, or their earnings, is kind of how it's going to be worked out. So if somebody during the year makes less than $1,000, then their tax won't be $100. It'll be 10% of whatever it was that they earned, and there will be a schedule of when that will be withheld from their check so that it can come in early, but it isn't a significant hardship on people who don't make large amounts of money in the early years.
On that point,
Representative Martin, on that point.
How far have you going on that with the special industries and all? Because we have some industries that depend, and maybe out-of-state workers who are more apt to take the low-income jobs than our own people who are on welfare or who are on public assistance of different natures. It's hard enough to get them into the job market, and especially the low-paying job market. And if we put this burden on them, then it's just further disincentive to go to work.
Well, Representative Martin, Chairman Larson, we haven't gone into great detail. I don't know that we can correct all of those deficiencies or those incentives or disincentives to work in this particular bill, but we certainly would be interested in hearing your recommendations. If there are significant disincentives, we obviously don't want that to happen. On the other hand, I think everybody recognizes that there's thousands of out-of-state workers who give nothing back to the state, if you will, and this at least is a start. I don't think it's anywhere near where it's going to have to be sometime in the future, but this is at least a beginning point in starting to receive some remuneration from those folks who are working in the state and not leaving anything.
On that point, that's what I'm afraid of, that we're using these low-level scums from out of state who come to work and take jobs that our people won't take as an excuse to tax ourselves. And I don't have you figure out how many out-of-state people you would get. There's about 70,000 people that work from out-of-state in the fishing and industry and the tourist industry alone, I think. But are we after those people who...
Well, I think that's part of the reason we are looking at taxing the out-of-state people. Whether it's those people or not, I don't know, and we haven't tried to stratify or differentiate which out-of-state people there are. They are.
Yeah. I'd like to just ask a couple of general questions, and then we will get the committee into more specifics. But we did have our Ledge Finance Division kind of review the budget, and I'm speaking now just in the operation and formula portion. I'm not speaking about the capital budget or the loans or the debt service. But in reviewing it, I see $106,986.2 increases and $84,994.1 decreases, or a total increase then in the operation portion of $21,992,000. And as I look at that, and before we get into any specifics there, I go over to the spending plan, and maybe I have a copy of the spending plan. You could help me with a question or two there. to get us started on fiscal year 95, we also have to look at the fiscal year we're now in. And one of the questions that I have in relation to that as I review the spending plan, I see it is the revenues are revised to reflect the barrel of oil at $13.25 per barrel, where last May I think we set it at $18.25 in the House, and I think we, in the conference committee, was $18.38, if I remember correctly. So we do have an adjustment there. But from the statutory budget reserve fund in the mental health trust income account, if I remember correctly, we were anticipating a balance of about $340 million, and I see it's reflected here at 312.9. What is the difference there? Could you? What took it from 340 down to 312?
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that there was a, based on legislative audits, review of the financial records for the end of FY 92, there was a $71 $1 million adjustment that was made to the statutory budget reserve fund. This reflects that adjustment.
I see. Okay.
Chairman, did you say 312?
Yes, 312.9. It's $269.5 million in general funds and $43.4 in mental health trust, for a total of 312.9. I also see it says from the constitutional budget reserve to balance the fiscal year 94 budget, $360 million from the constitution budget reserve. Does the administration have any plans to introduce legislation to accomplish that, or how are we going to direct attention to that point?
That's something that I think we still need to work out. We don't currently have plans to introduce legislation to affect that. Something that I think the legislature and the administration are going to need to work out exactly how that is done, and as a matter of fact, how much of the constitutional budget reserve, how much of it's available with just a simple majority, and how much is going to take a supermajority to access. Obviously, it's a significant discussion that we need to have during this legislative session.
Yeah, because I noticed for fiscal year 95, under the spending plan, it also calls for $470.3 million from the constitutional budget reserve, or for the remainder of this year, and for next year, that would be approximately $830 million, and there isn't that much in the constitutional budget reserve at this time that I'm aware of.
Mr. Chairman, part of that is not coming from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. Part of that is coming from the Mental Health Trust Income Account.
Okay, that would be the 29.2 and the 43.4.
The appropriate number is 360 plus 441 is what, which is $800 million about even, and I think our calculations are that it about zeros out the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund.
So we're anticipating at this time, we haven't gotten together and made any agreements yet, but I think from what the Department of Revenue had to say, kind of a ballpark figure of $15.04 anyway for next year for a price of a barrel of oil. And if everything would go according to the spending plan, we would spend between general fund and mental health trust income account next year $2.5 billion, which would be down from 3.210 this year, a reduction of over $700 million. And I guess the point that I was trying to make is that even with this reduction of $700 million within the budget, in one way or another, it's still going to, as you said, require large amounts of reserves, either statutory or constitutional budget reserves or some other source, in order to balance the budget. Therefore, we do have a big job ahead of us that we're going to have to work on, and I'll give someone else a chance to ask any questions that they have, and then I have some more later. Does anyone else have any questions at this time? Okay, let me go on then.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Terrio.
Mr. Stastny, you indicated that we're not going to balance the budget by cutting. We're not going to cut our way out of the problem that we've got. And you indicate that certain departments got increases where they could argue that, and you told them to hold the line. And I'm thinking back to my budget subcommittees last year, sometimes in frustration in dealing with the administrative personnel. And I tried to press on them that I was trying to look to see where we were going to be 5 years from now or 10 years from now, and how we could set a course to get there. And when you've got departments able to argue for increases in a budget that we know we can't afford, and we can't cut our way out of it, we can't tax our way out of it, it just seems like we're not charting a course to get ourselves where we all know we're going to end up, either smoothly or, fall over the edge. And I guess I don't understand what the philosophy is from the administration.
Well, I appreciate that, Representative Terrio, and sometimes I think we end up wondering what the philosophy is, too, when we have, and generally the things that the only places that I'm aware of that there have been increases are areas where there's additional federal mandates. For example, in the Department of Environmental Conservation, there's, I think you see about $1.2 million in there, which is the Clean Air Act that's mandated, but we mandated to our Department of Environmental Conservation that they would have to raise the money from those people who needed additional work with. And so while there's an increase there, an increase that we felt the federal government has directed us, and we didn't really have a whole lot of choice, we did, however, tell DEC they weren't going to get additional general funds. And so they needed to find other ways. What was the other one? Department of Natural Resources has got a $4 million increase in there, but it's all program receipts. Do you remember what that was? Anyway, we understand. And the dilemma is, you know, how do you operate a government that has more people it has to serve, that has more mandates it has to take care of, and still do it within within the dollars? I think that we is something that we all need to step back and take a realistic look at, and that's what I think we're trying to do. We did, as a matter of fact, and I'm not sure if you've seen it yet or not, Representative Terrio. I know we discussed with Representative Larson and some other leaders during the interim. We had a 5-year plan that did show how, you know, a way out of it, but the way out of it continued to hold the line on spending and does include additional revenue raising measures. And we certainly are more than willing to. Each of the increases in the budget are because of the increase in service, and I guess that's something else that. But I've come to the conclusion that we're beyond the stage of budget cutting. We're to the stage of service cutting. And that's what we need to do, is figure out which services we no longer need and the people of Alaska no longer are going to depend on us for, and start making reductions there. So I'm as frustrated as you are.
So do you have a process within the administration that you do that?
To do what?
Within a department when an agency is arguing that, well, we need some more money here because we have a demand. Is there any process that they look inward into the department on where they can get the money to shift over to that need, or is it just always new money?
It's not new money, Representative Terrio. I just explained that to you. No department got new money unless they could show where they could get the money from the public, where they could reduce the service someplace else. We've not given any department new money except the ones that I laid out, the Department of Public Safety, and the Department of Public Safety, the governor wanted them to have more troopers. We didn't direct them to find money someplace else for it, because in the Department of Public Safety, it doesn't seem like it's there. That's a department, and we can all be concerned over how much a trooper costs, because that's really what the difficulty is in the Department of Public Safety, in my opinion, is we do have less troopers now than we had a number of years ago, but they cost so much more individually that we're spending, you know, we're spending more money for less troopers. But generally, our directions to the departments that there is no new money, and that if they need a new service, they need to find where they're going to get the money for that.
Representative Navarre.
Yeah, with respect to formula programs, particularly the foundation program, where you're showing, at least in this book, the amount prior to supplementals as the amount that's being carried forward, is it your intent to fund the supplemental for last year for education?
Are you talking about the supplemental that would be introduced in this?
Right.
We haven't come to that conclusion yet.
Okay, well, if you don't, I guess we'll get to that when we get to it, but the supplementals are based, as you know, on projections, so that the total impact of that would be borne by those areas that did have increases in the student population, which would be grossly unfair. Secondly, if you're going to put the formula program, you're going to allow for the supplementals, then are you also going to adjust that next year for the amount that's in here? And thirdly, if you're going to reduce the unit value through this process, do you have any alternatives for local governments who will be negatively impacted, sometimes almost double, because they're already at the cap and they'll have to reduce their local cap also? Do you have any alternatives to allow them some flexibility so that they could make up that difference?
We haven't discussed those, but I'm sure that we would be willing to discuss those.
Chairman, I have a couple other questions. Governor's OMB's government efficiency task force recommendations, have those been implemented in this budget? Were they done administratively, or are they contained in this budget?
Well, they've been done at the departmental level just kind of as they went along, and I guess that's kind of what has allowed them to live on the same dollars that they had before. I couldn't say that I could point to a dollar amount and say that's as a result of that task force.
With respect to the troopers, and you're correctly identifying that we have less troopers, but they cost a lot more, have you looked at the cause and effect relationship for that, and are you making any recommendations for a long-term approach to maybe curb the growth in individual costs?
Well, I personally believe that the long-term way to solve that problem is to allow the troopers to have the right to strike. So then we could negotiate, and we'd be back in comparing those needs against other needs. Right now, when we have mandatory arbitration, at least it appears to an outsider looking in that's been a significant reason for the growth in the dollars there. We've been sort of outside, if you will, the decision. It's been an arbitrator who's made the decision, which we've had to live with.
Yeah, I'll go through at this time the various agencies and name some of the increases. So if any members of the committee or anyone else has any questions in relation to it, they can probably make a note. But in the Department of Administration, and I'm talking about general fund dollars now, there's $8,531,000 worth of increases, with the largest being, of course, the longevity bonus of over $4.6 million. And the second largest being leasing, which is approximately $1.8 million. But we also have increases in senior services, public defender, OPA, RATNET, and then in the agency operation. Under commerce and economic development, there's $382,900 worth of general fund increases in occupational licensing, the Alaska Public Utilities Commission, and Economic Development. Under Community and Regional Affairs, there's $562,200 worth of increases, with the largest amount being in rural energy. In corrections, Community Corrections is an increase of $688,000. And I'll have this sheet run off for everyone as soon as I get done here so that we'll all have a copy. Under courts, as Mr. Smesky has told us, court operations has increased to $119,200. Under education, it's a total of approximately $2.5 million, a little bit under, with the foundation program being the largest increase of $2,015,400. And it's my understanding that these are general fund dollars to offset reduced PL 874 federal money. So it takes approximately $2 million to offset the loss of federal funding in order to keep things status quo. Voc Rehab is $275,000, State Libraries $54,000, and Agency Operation another $131.8. Under DEC, as Mr. Snasky has already mentioned, environmental quality, air quality, is an increase of $1,460,000 for that program. Fish and game, it's an increase of $548,100, with commercial fisheries being $503,000 worth of that, with smaller increases for sports fisheries, wildlife conservation, and subsistence. In the governor's office, this is one reduction we could probably easily make by canceling the elections for next November. We could save $2,135,800. However, I think the general public might not stand for that. Health and Social Services, which is the agency with the largest increases of $36.7 million. AFDC Public Assistance is an increase of slightly over $7 million. Medicaid, which would be the state match, $25.3 million. Foster Care, DFYS, approximately $2.6 million. Harborview, $1.1 million. And then other smaller increases in the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Services, API, and state health. Under labor, we have a $351,000 increase in agency operations. And under law, prosecution is a $283,000 increase. In oil and gas litigation, approximately $5.59 million. Under Veterans and Military Affairs, there's an $832,000 increase, with the largest portion being disaster planning and control, and $150,000 in Army Guard facility maintenance. Under Natural Resources, we have about a $4.2 million increase, resource development being about $1.7 million of that, and fire suppression about $1.9 million. And minor increases in parks and agency operations. Public safety, as Mr. Smatsky told us, has an increase of about $3.3 million, with the largest increases being for troopers and fish and wildlife protection, other increases being for motor vehicles, training, records operation, domestic violence counsel, and fire prevention. Revenue, the two increases are $80,000 for the Alcoholic Beverage Control Commission Board and charitable gaming of $156,000. Transportation and public facilities, we have maintenance and operation, a $7.8 million increase. Regional office operations, $386,000, and minor increases for state aviation and state engineering. The university is an interesting one. It's my understanding that the university had $27.4 million worth of increases in their budget, which were granted, and then they were also had a $27.4 million unallocated reduction. So they get their increases, but they have to find the money somewhere else in their budget. Is that correct?
Well, as you know, at the university, the Board of Regents pretty much writes that budget, and by the time we get it, there really isn't time to go through the individual items, and so the unallocated reduction was an indication to them that there wouldn't be any increase, and they'll need to redo their budget.
So those are the things that make up roughly the $107 million worth of increases that are in the budget, and like we mentioned, in the case of the university, a very big one. It's increases granted, but an unallocated decrement also issued to balance it off. So, any discussion on any of those, Representative Martin?
Well, first on that point, sir, and then I'm going to get into a federal problem. Number one, we did encourage and support the university last year to increase student fees, and it was kind of a hard sell, but the students agreed with it, as long as it was directly related to instructional purposes. And I think the university so far has done real good in bringing in even temporary instruction teachers for most of the campus where they were sorely needed. Now, it seems like if they went through all this, are we then going to punish them by taking this amount out of general funds? Because that's what it does. They offset and they raised their program by something like $20 million. This isn't all program received from student fees, but a majority of it is. And so therefore, we say we're going to stay at the same level you were last year, even though you increase your fees to meet the services. And it looks like that maybe we'll get into it later, that you're decreasing them.
My understanding, Representative Martin, is that this is general fund in addition to the addition, the fee increase. I don't believe that this takes any of that fee increase.
It doesn't. You're talking pure general funds here. They were. Secondly, on the point that the chairman mentioned about making up for federal shortfalls in various programs, and he didn't say which ones. What is the philosophy, what's the rationale that the department uses there? Are we going to pick up all federal shortfalls from now on, and where does it stop, especially on mandatory programs? Is there any rationale?
My understanding is the one that Representative Larson referred to was the PL 874 in the Department of Education, and you know that just enters into our formula. I don't think it is any more or any less to any school district. It's just enters into our formula, and so if there's less money in PL 874, if the school districts are going to get the same amount of money, which I think we've pretty much been agreed to the way that foundation formula is calculated, whether we like the amount or not. So I think it's kind of different. I think there's other federal programs where departments have come to us and asked to replace funds, and we've not allowed that to happen because it. But this one I think is different than most of the federal monies.
And so you will evaluate each one where
absolutely.
The federal said we're cutting. Last one. So goes back to program receipts. Do you know per division, I thought the governor's bill last year was very beneficial and I supported it, where we did allow various departments to increase their service charges for various things like DMV and all. Do we have a breakdown, sir, of how many departments took advantage of that and what kind of increase it has been by agencies for services?
We are required by statute to provide a report to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee on proposed fees, changes to existing fees by regulation, and proposed fee changes in statutes. And we did provide that to the LBA committee meeting, or to the committee this month. So that is available for you.
Any additional questions on the increases, Representative Davies?
I'd like to follow up Representative Martin's question on program receipts. It's all being relatively new to the game down here. It's been something that confuses me from time to time as to what the philosophy is about it. It seems to me that that if an agency can raise money, that that's equally acceptable course change to balance the budget. That is, if we can set ourselves on a course where they bring in more money as to meet their increase in services, that's an equally acceptable way to balance the budget as opposed to cutting the budget. Does the administration agree with that?
Well, I think we do to a certain extent. I think we want to make sure that we're not doing that just to buoy up unneeded services. I mean, and that's why when departments propose new services, we ask them if they can come up with new program receipt dollars, because obviously that's an indication from, you know,